Yeah, have a seat. Getting coffee. How do you guys prefer your coffee, by the way?
I just buy.
Yeah, just buy.
Anything else? Some water or something? Or...
I usually don't eat or drink anything until 7 o'clock anyway.
I read one of the other interviews, and I'd like to hear more about this swamp that is a part of the creative process. I was kind of hoping to see it, but...
Oh. Oh, my apartment?
Well, is that a euphemism, or is it actually a swamp? What's the story?
Oh, well, I don't know. What do you hear about?
It was about you were talking about your day in one of these question and answers, and you were saying, like, late in the afternoon after you check your email and things, the interviewer seemed kind of surprised at your nocturnal lifestyle. But then you said something about how part of your day is to talk with your brother, and you guys walk through a swamp.
Oh yeah, that's right. The Clear Creek Trail in Silverdale is this walk that we could go on, and. Yeah, and also got sick of the Navy guys yelling at us when walking down the street, you know, all kinds of epithets and things that we're not going to put on tape in my voice, but it's bizarre because I mean we live, you know, all over the country, and this is Silverdale is the worst town.
No kidding. For
getting yelled at on the street.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it just on the Navy guys.
No. It's all the triangle of high schools too. Yeah, it's Navy guys, high school kids. Probably more high school kids than Navy guys. Although, everybody, you know, all comers, apparently. Cause
it's funny to hear those specifics because I had this romantic notion of you guys in the wilderness, you know, swamps, mystic creatures, and the, you know.
Well, what was that? I mean, the park was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. Yeah, it was like that. I mean, you see snakes and stuff all over the place, and right. All kinds of swamp birds and stuff. And we used to, when we were growing up, we'd always go on these nature hikes, kind of going through like the redwood forest. We grew up in California,
okay.
And we'd always kind of my very kind of first actual computer game planning memory was when I was like 8 years old, and I think it was the redwood forest where we were just. It was about some platform game or something, right? There was going to be the forest level, and there was going to be the
based something. On King's Quest, of course, since that was the only good game out at the time.
Yeah, we had these different levels planned out and these different things, but that was a long time ago. I don't even remember the specifics anymore, but we actually ended up writing, I think that kind of turned into Evil Castle, actually. Mm-hmm. It was like there was a forest level or something, and then there was, and we had just seen The White Buffalo with Charles Bronson. I don't know if you've seen that. It's a funny premise for a movie, right? The killer buffalo or whatever. It's not the first animal you think of, but neither are giant rabbits, I guess, or whatever, Night of the Leap is that kind of thing. I just remember that there was kind of this forest and then this desert and this giant cliff that comes up, and then there's the evil castle, but in front of the evil castle is this big white buffalo guarding it or whatever. We're impressionable, we're like little kids.
So how does it feel to kind of make games now? I mean, I know it's like probably kind of an impossible question to answer, but the games that you're making now, how do you think that they compare to the games that you enjoyed a lot as kids? How do you think?
They're extensions of the games we enjoyed as kids, I think, because we were following, we've just had a big kind of DOS box splurge recently, so I'm speaking from refresh memories now, they definitely are kind of extensions of the things we were playing growing up, like Seven Cities of Gold and Starflight, these really old kind of exploration games as part of this randomly generated world map comes out of that thing. And of course there's games like Rogue and Hack and Larn and some of the old old roguelike games inspired that section of it, and all the Ultima games, that kind of thing. And those games were kind of at a point now, if you look at a game like say Ultima 7 or something, I mean, it's not that different conceptually from something like Oblivion or something like that. So we're kind of trying to put things on the arc where we thought they were going back in 1993 or something,
right?
And where it didn't end up making it,
right?
And so that's kind of So it's definitely an extension of that kind of work.
Yeah, I looked into I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. The Oubliette.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, I don't speak French or whatever it is.
Yeah, because I was
could be bleh for all I know, right?
Yeah, who knows?
Could be anything.
playing Liberal Crime Squad, which is amazing, by the way. How do you feel about the contemporary incarnations of that game? Because it's kind of been taken up by like more of a fan community.
I haven't played it. Have you played theirs? I haven't played theirs. The only thing I saw about it was that it said they had added a conservative crime squad and stuff like that. I thought that was bad.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, then they got rid of it.
They made it optional or something. I don't remember. Yeah. It's too bad because it's
optional now when you start it. It's you can.
Yeah, I just thought I thought that made it gamey, right? Mm-hmm. But rather than whatever it was before.
Yeah.
But I mean, the guy who took it up though, Jonathan S. Fox. We actually met him. He was over at DigiPen. I think he works for like Novel Industries now or something. But he had his heart in the right place. So I think he was definitely cognizant of. He had like volunteered for political campaigns and stuff. He was mm-hmm. very active in that kind of thing.
Got it.
And so he had his finger pretty much on the pulse most of the time. I don't know why that got in there, but mm-hmm. I don't know what else was in there like that or whatever. Because I didn't play it.
It's hard to say because like playing the fan-made version, I guess that's the best way I think to refer to it, and then the last version that you released, there is a bit of a difference, but it seems more like the differences are in the interface and in like populating like more inventory and things like
we didn't fill in anything, and our interface, I mean, we say it's based on Oubliette or whatever, but it's also we just crap by itself, right?
Okay.
It is pretty close to how it was actually, but that was more an excuse, I guess. But I'm trying to remember if there was anything else. I think they expanded on the interrogations and things mm-hmm. like that. There are a bunch of little things like that. I remember going to our Wikipedia page and it doesn't mention them at all, and it's just like, then there's a conservative crime squad. And
oh, that's
like, that sucks. But sorry. No, it was pretty fun though.
I guess first question is kind of a simple one, but why dwarves as the central subject matter?
I'm not sure it is. I mean, it's not that simple, is it? I mean, we because we were gonna make a really little game, right? Where like it started from Mutant Miner, right? There was the Mutant Miner game. Where you had your, it was like this turn-based mining game, kind of like Dig Dug, except I mean, Dig Dug's real-time, I know, but it was kind of this turn-based thing where you, I mean, it was most like Miner VGA, which I don't know if you played Miner VGA, it was this old downloadable game off like bulletin boards or whatever way back when, and you'd kind of, it was called, you can tell from the title, Miner VGA, because it's like VGA just came out or whatever, I was like, yeah, but you'd dig down and you kind of get these I don't know if they're called mutagen or whatever, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but you get these things, and so your miner could grow extra arms and hold extra picks and kind of just dig. It was one of these random side projects that kind of got like just a few day thing, but then we were like, we wanted to try and recover that idea. And the turn-based thing, because you could get extra miners, the turn-based thing, you got like one of those old SSI games where you're moving this guy, it got really annoying. So we're like, this game should be real-time. And then we decided, well, it should be dwarves too, or something. It was just like, they should be mining. And then this was all like in the course of one conversation. It was like, these things should be mining. And then we got the idea that you should... Once you get your mind dug out, you should be able to take an adventure in afterward and explore it for kind of a high scoreless purposes, right? You'd like dig the thing out. It wouldn't have made the details of what your crafts were, but when you recover a cup or something, it would kind of add it to the high score list, and the entry in the high score list would only be done once the fortress has been fully explored by successive dying adventurers. And
Adventure Mode is way, way more of a deal than it ended up. I mean, right now we're just about getting back to where felt like adventure mode should be, but it was you're supposed to get your score by going as an adventurer and finding the stuff that your dwarves made. That was the whole idea.
Got it.
Yeah.
So it seems like the initial conception of it was much more like game shaped.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was a 2 month project, we thought. Because I mean, this whole time we had Slaves to Armok 1 mm-hmm. in progress, had been in progress for years at that point. We started this Mutant Miner excursion in like 2002, and Armok was from 2000, and of course there have been incarnations before that all the way back to like 93 or something with Drag Slayer or whatever. It's just because it's eight letters, Dragon Slayer is Drag
right, Slayer. Right.
And so Slaves to Armok was the game that held all of our big fantasy ideas, these things we had been working on for, you know, a decade. And it was strictly a kind of adventure game, though, where you just walk around and shoot rabbits with a fire spell or something. It was very weird. Random things would come out of the wilderness, and then you could use your swords or magic on them. It was a kind of bloated monstrosity in a way, but it wasn't even playable.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always do these little side games at the same time, and that was just one of them. It was just going to be one of them because we hadn't released, I don't think, Liberal Crime Squad or any. I think maybe World War I Medic was out at that time, and some of the others. But it was just going to fit into that steady stream. We had like 15 other games, and they were just these little side notes while we had Armok going on. We had jobs at this point where we're not supporting ourselves off this. It was just all hobby stuff, and we haven't had time to release a single game since Dwarf Fortress came out because there's just not time now.
Yeah. Well, you also thought you were going to have this academic career, right? And so, I guess,
yeah, I'm not sure I've ever really thought I was going to make it, but...
let me get some caps. I'll be right back. The second one's not really a question. Let's see. So I'm really curious about this relationship with your fan contributions,
mm-hmm.
because it seems like... there's so much subtlety in this interaction because things like the visualizers, not just the tile sets, but like stone sets,
mm-hmm.
and things like, it seems like it's getting your project a lot more exposure because it makes it more accessible, but it's also, it diminishes a lot of the really great characteristics. Like, I think, having played Dwarf Fortress in like the text-only mode,
mm-hmm.
I think it's way better, it's more immersive. And it's not as difficult as it seems like it would be. So something like Stone Sense, I think, kind of impedes the enjoyability of Dwarf Fortress.
That's the barrier to entry, though,
mm-hmm.
is that they just can't. I mean, from our perspective, I think we've been playing text-based roguelike style games as long as I can remember, and so I can't even kind of tell the difference between
it should be easy if you're used to dealing with roguelikes, or relatively easy compared to someone who's never played a text-based game before.
Right.
But
especially since a lot of the commands are the same too.
Yeah, I think so too. But I would say that I don't know. I mean, you guys of course would know much better than me, but it seems to me that most of the people who are playing this game are playing a text-only game for the first time.
Yeah, for the first time, as long as they didn't like pick it up from their friends or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Probably just download it. I mean, as far as I can tell, even though there's this huge community around it and all this kind of exposure from the visualizers or the game itself has gotten from various websites and so on, still seems like the majority of people just kind of hear about it, come and download it, and we never hear from them
mm-hmm.
in any way, and it seems like they're just playing the vanilla game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a turnoff or not for most people.
Yeah.
It seems like maybe it is these days, because now you've got kids that are growing up and they've only had 3D games. Because
mm-hmm.
when did Underworld come out, like 92, so that would be 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, 18 year olds, which are getting to be kind of our pretty much our prime user base, comes right around that age, and they were born when the first big 3D game came out.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think that makes Dwarf Fortress that much more compelling. Like, because it has these kind of anachronistic traits, but still it has an incredibly devoted group, a huge group, seems like, as far as indie games go. I mean, it's a big group of folks.
Yeah, if you're not a I mean, I guess, well, indie games, there's so many now, and there's so many big ones you can kind of name off the top of your head that it seems small from my perspective. To be like, things like, if you take Braid, for example, or something, which I never played, but hype, you know, through the ceiling or whatever, I'm sure hundreds of thousands of people have played it or whatever. I mean, the guy's a millionaire now, right? I know he is. So he obviously got like hundreds of thousands of people at least playing his game. Makes it seem like we're kind of, I mean, well, we've had hundreds of thousands of people play our game. We've had 4,000 pay for it, but we've had 100,000. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we do have I have no idea how many people we actually retain.
Well, yeah.
It's hard to say. But we do have about 1,000 people, I guess, on the forums. Mm-hmm. And maybe more than half the people that donate probably aren't even on the forums. Because I don't frequent game forums.
Right, yeah.
So, there's...
It's interesting to me that... because you have, obviously, the number of downloads. And you can look at that anytime you want. And you can, you know, kind of discern different stats from that and then compare it to your donations and to your forum users and things. But I guess I don't want to turn this into a conversation about like marketing or some shit, but it seems like Braid was a commercial product only, and you guys are just saying donate if you really feel like it.
Yeah.
Give us money so we can keep doing it. Yeah, but you don't have to.
I think we're doing well there. I mean, if we get... I mean, I think it was 3-5%, something like that, donate, which is not that bad. I mean, especially if you buy the industry figures on pirating, then it's almost as good. It's like 90% of people pirated this game or whatever. I don't necessarily buy that, although people do pirate a lot of crap as far as I can tell. They're like, I'm going to try before I buy or whatever.
Right. Well, as a developer, like I said, you're always looking at your income in a positive light then, because you're never losing money and you're always getting more than you expect to.
Yeah, it always feels great. Yeah. I mean, it always feels good. And you don't, I mean, and there's the flip side that you don't, I mean, even though we put a lot on ourselves, there's no actual sense of obligation that kind of comes with, I mean, the hassle kind of obligation where someone's like, or whatever, then it doesn't matter, right? It's like you don't have to listen.
Got it. So like if you're selling the product like Braid or something, like, you have to support it and update it and fix it.
Although I mean the way those guys go through like Xbox Arcade Live or whatever, everyone, all that crap is dealt with for them. So there's quite a bit more infrastructure than there used to be to kind of get a thing out like that.
I suppose that's true. Yeah. So hopefully a simple question. How do you decide which elements of known fantasy to include and which ones to leave out?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's just based on what we grew up with. I mean, there weren't guns in Conan, right? So there's no guns in our game. And we don't... Steampunk turns us off, so there's not a lot of steam, even though that's really common for fantasy dwarves now, right? To have like a mechanized golem thing walking around with a big steam pipe coming out of its head or something. It's like, woo, woo, train's coming through or whatever. It's totally just a kind of taste thing. It's like we preferred it a certain way, grew up with it a certain way, and that's really all that comes into it when it comes to the overall feel of the fantasy. For stuff where we don't have an opinion either way, we just kind of set this 1400, the year 1400 AD cutoff.
Okay.
And it's not hard and fast, but it's just a way to give people an answer when they suggest some random thing. Mm-hmm. And mostly it's worked out. I don't even remember what the occasion was for the year 1400.
I think it was the gunpowder, that's something to do with rifle or muskets or something. We didn't feel like we wanted.
Yeah, because there were guns before then, but not quite in the, and maybe it has to do with 1492 too, like the whole kind of
Empire
thing. Just that feels what we wanted to stay away from. Not having empires, but having these kind of colonial gun-based empires.
Well, it feels, it's odd how natural it feels to somebody who's totally new, because you kind of maybe I think Tolkien plays a big role.
Oh, sure.
Like, because our notions of dwarves and elves and things, a lot of that seems inherited from Tolkien, and so if we kind of have this vague assumption about the way that the races interact and what kind of weird beasts we can expect and things.
We wanted to start from a comfortable place, because we're adding these random elements in now. You can see them all around the periphery now, with the forgotten beasts, titans, night creatures, demons are all randomly generated, and those are the things that might as well be randomly generated. It's like starting with elves, goblins, dwarves, humans, and the D&D kobold thrown in for good measure. It's certainly not a mind spirit or whatever they actually were. It's a straight D&D, like right between like second edition when they were turning from dogs into worshippers of dragons or something. They had this kind of half reptilian middle ground, and that's where we're at with them. Because it seemed like the least kind of strangely stylized, like they looked like chihuahuas or something before, right. And that now they're like little draconians, I guess. I'm not really familiar with the new D&D, but that's my impression. And you don't know either.
I sure don't. Again, like just reading, like seeing the word kobold. It was a German thing
German.
Before it was D&D, I think.
German mind spirit. Thing, yeah. Where they lived in the mines and they were little old men, I guess.
Yeah.
the big actual kind of cultural baggage we're bringing to this, even probably more than Tolkien directly, although with all the movies and stuff, maybe not anymore, is other games. Mm. I mean, if you've seen a kobold in every single fantasy game before ours, and they all look like from the spectrum between dogs and dragons, little dragon people, then that's what you think it is. And people do bring a kind of different opinion of what they are, and they're like, well, I think it should have hair, because now we go into the raw files, and they have hair or scales, and you make a decision, right?
Right.
And so now that we have to make these decisions, it's almost like drawing art for them. It kind of ruins it for some people, but then they can just change it to the other thing. I mean, if they're the kind of person that looks at the raw files, then they're also pretty much the kind of person that can change the raw files to suit themselves. Which is, I mean, like putting beards on the female dwarves, for example.
That was one of my questions, was about that, because Tolkien's female dwarves have beards as well, but in Dwarf Fortress they don't.
Yeah, I don't remember if they do in the book, or if that was in the movie. I don't remember if it was in the book or not.
They joke about it in the books. I reread the books.
I looked for it and couldn't find it, because I was wondering if that was just something they added to the movie. So yeah, then they've got beards there, but I don't know why we didn't. We just like,
well, it
just thought it was a little cheesy.
Here's another question that kind of goes along with it, and I hope I don't offend you with this question or not.
Not possible.
It's just, I can't tell you how much esteem I have for this game. I think it's incredible, and I keep calling it a game, and I feel like that's a mistake because it's more a simulation.
Yeah, although I guess technically it's a toy because there's no winning or losing streak. There's just losing, and since there's no winning, it's a toy instead of a game. Although a simulation, I prefer.
I feel like maybe like SimCity or something. I could see that as being a toy, but with Dwarf Fortress, it seems like since the player's role, especially because it's so hard. Like, adventure mode specifically is really hard. Maybe I just suck at it.
No, that's not easy.
It seems like the player's role is really diminished, especially in contrast to all the other games, which are like, you are incredibly heroic and special and legendary. And
I mean, you've got your hit point meter, and as long as you kind of make sure they don't get too low and have 20 healing potions with you at all times,
right.
Then we don't go for that.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So it's more realistic. And therefore, I think like this, all these aspects of realism, the way they combine simulation seems like a more appropriate time.
That's fair.
In the spirit of that statement,
it's all leading to something offensive, I heard.
Well, we'll see. So there's kind of some lead up to this question. So we've got all the physical descriptions, especially the incredibly violent ones, which are photorealistic and detailed and accurate. And there's also animal husbandry in the farming aspects, the simulation. Goddamn cats having kittens all the time. So these dwarves, they bear children, but they're never described as being pregnant, and they're never described as engaging in sexual activities.
That's true.
So my question is, would this level of description negatively affect the game somehow? Or is the endorsement of sexual content in the simulation somehow inappropriate in a way that violence isn't?
I think for us, we wouldn't care. I'm kind of on the side of I'd rather put that stuff in there just because everything else is in there.
Yeah.
But just the climate in this country, I think that's really all it comes down to, right? Is I don't want to have sex in a video game, have a 13-year-old play it, and then get annoyed by the ensuing annoyances. Although, I mean, the horrible things they do in the towns and adventure mode and stuff. I mean, if someone came by, like one of those lawyer guys came by and actually read our adventure mode threads, maybe it doesn't matter. It's already, the horse is already way out of the barn.
Well,
but,
maybe so. Yeah, I don't think there's, I mean, there's no laws but, against it.
And, yeah, and it's just...
You could be harassed about it, but
we don't want sexual violence in the game, for example. I mean, it's just kind of squicky to put that in there, even though it'd be completely period appropriate, right?
That's right. Yeah,
and it's not like there's not a storytelling aspect to that. There are a lot of stories that revolve around that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And we'll probably skirt the boundaries as far as like people stealing wives and that kind of thing.
With the night creatures.
Yeah, the night creatures stealing people's...
Forcing them to marry.
Forcing them to marry, converting them into a monster and forcing them to have kids or whatever.
Well, I think that kind of like euphemistic distance is also probably period appropriate too. Because in our historical documentation of these horrible cultural atrocities, they're not described as rape. They're talked about, it's like forced wife serfdom or something
so that's probably not going to change as much as all you have to do is go to the modding threads and you can have penises and testicles getting hacked off and wrestled with and doing throws with them and stuff and, it's only a heartbeat away if you care,
I guess. So yeah, well, that's an easy answer for you, but I'm curious about. I mean, you already answered.
Philosophically speaking, it's a matter of priorities, I guess. I think it is just it's not. I mean, it's kind of a PR thing. I mean, people just in this country don't care about violence as much. Whereas, if we put in sex, we might lose 20-30% of our fan base over something that we don't think is important.
Right.
Even if we disagree with, people cutting and running because of that. We certainly don't have a problem with it if you look at, Liberal Crime Squad or something's a little worse.
Yeah.
I don't remember quite all of what was put in there, but most of it was. I think we stayed away from sexual violence again in that game, but maybe that was it. I don't recall.
It's been so long. Like the pickup lines.
Yeah,
that's about it.
There's some horrible stuff there.
So, similar question, kind of similar. So we've got all this medical realism, but there's no. It doesn't seem like maybe there's programmatic stuff going on that I don't know about as a player because I haven't really looked at the raws at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no model seemingly for the excretion of bodily waste.
That's right.
We've got all this plumbing and we're disposing of garbage, so why don't we have like shit and excreted waste to deal with?
It's kind of this almost exactly the same thing. There are so many useful things that come out of adding that stuff that we're going to be doing basically everything except maybe having dwarves going off and taking dumps, because I think that's where people would start to get problems with it. But I mean, tracking animals and stuff, it's very important to have like animal sign in the forest or whatever. And the sewer is probably the single most important adventure environment. And you need a reason to have those, but I mean, those would kind of work for garbage too. But it's the same thing though. We just don't want to become known as that game with the piss and the shit in it, that game with the rape in it or whatever. And that's what we would be. I think at least nothing is sure, and we're as much on a journey blind as anybody writing games right now, I think. So we don't, I mean, there's no reason to throw a monkey in the wrench if it's not a really, really high priority. Throw a monkey in the wrench. Is that what I said? I don't know what that means. Throw a wrench in the works. Throwing a monkey in the wrench would be space age, but yeah, that's really all it comes down to. I mean, we did kind of have piss and shit in the game. When you go to the demon places, there was brown and yellow filth in the muck demon areas and so on. And that's what it was, right? So
we did talk about it right when we were first starting the game. We were like, oh, maybe we could add this in. We'd actually discussed it probably before we even had the detailed dwarf bodies that they have now. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it, but yeah, then we. It's kind of like what Tarn's saying. It's like, that's what the game would be known for. Especially as simple as it was back then. That is, I mean, it would be like, okay, those guys have the gross
popular game. I mean, maybe if we did it, maybe if we put it in, like we're saying, in 5 years when we start working toward it, it's just not going to be a big deal down the road. Because you've got everything else. And it's like the next natural step is adding shit to the game, right?
Maybe so.
It's like, so yeah, that's really all it comes down to, though. It's like, it's not that we're prudes, mm-hmm. if that's what you meant about being offended or whatever. That's not it at all.
I didn't mean it in that way. I guess what I meant was like, I didn't want to like insinuate that you hadn't given it thought.
It's just a weird tightrope where we don't really know what we're, you know, what's going to happen if we do this or that. So I mean, it kind of. I mean, in a sense, you're siding with you know, conformism and mediocrity, but it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
it's not a big deal. There are a lot of shit fans on the boards. If you read through the suggestion thread, there's a new one like every couple of weeks. It's like, why isn't there shit in the game? Yeah. You have everything else, and it's like, and there'd be a thread called like, nothing is sacred. Add shit now, or whatever. And it's like, it's so certainly people think come from that perspective that we're intentionally avoiding it.
I guess talking about this makes me think of the game The Sims. You played it. Maybe. You know, anyways.
Yeah, he's the one that
which also has sex in it too.
It does, but the sex is really euphemistic. But the like the bladder concerns are photorealistically depicted, except it's like it's blurred. But you have to do it, or else they like wet themselves, or they defecate in their pants, or something, and it's tragic. And then they get upset. And to think that a game which is entirely intended for like a mainstream audience to include those things, I think is kind of inspiring in that way, but I don't want to like be one of these message board guys just to like butt you about.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I haven't played it, but I don't know if it works better in that environment, because it's really focused on the home or whatever.
They call it, domestic issues.
Right. Yeah, I mean, just for me, I realize I'm a little older than your core audience, I guess, but
I think the thing that might differentiate it from The Sims in terms of, because I think we talked about this before, that The Sims had that stuff, but and so maybe it wouldn't be such a big deal, you know, like we were saying PR wise, but there would be sewage systems, and you would have like the flows and channels for it, and storage vats and floodgates and levers and flinging devices and stuff that it'd be significantly more involved than probably what goes on in The Sims. I think that's what we're afraid of. Just trying to recall the conversations, but we definitely talked about it.
So, you kind of grew out of this. The narrative is pretty absent. Were you ever tempted to have a storyline imposed on the game?
Do you mean like a fixed storyline?
Yeah.
We're trying to make it as the fantasy. What is it called?
The fantasy world generator.
Fantasy world generator. So it's different every single time. I mean, it's kind of like when I think back to when we were talking about Starflight, you could explore the entire galaxy, and every time the planets you explored would be the same. And there's something to be said for that. Like, you always go back to that same planet, you remember it, and so even though you already explored it, you have more to explore, and eventually you can explore it all. And there's something to be said for that, but at the same time, having it different every time is its own thing. Mm-hmm. And because you will explore it all eventually, you get bored with it. But this one, we're trying to keep people playing it.
Yeah.
Ideally, after you generate, if a person downloaded the game, didn't really know the deal, generated a world, it would be like they were in a fixed plot game, right. And they wouldn't know it.
That's a good point.
That's what we're hoping for. I mean, right now, I mean, obviously it doesn't even occur to a person maybe that's what we're going for, because it's so there's the lack of any kind of narrative structure at all. I mean, you just talk to a guy and he's like, you know, there's a night creature here, press enter. There's a night creature here. There's a night creature here, press enter. There's a bandit here, press enter. The person can tell pretty soon that it's like, that's not the same night. You know, that's not going to be something they worked on as a fixed plot or whatever. But, I mean, hopefully, at least thinking, you know, optimistically about it, you can see that in the future, where it just continues to differentiate those things and explains more about why your dwarves are at founding this fortress, gives you a backstory for that, tells you what's going on in the area around you where you've settled, and then you're allowed to interact with the world. You know maybe you can actually fool someone sometime, and we're looking forward to the day when we can do that. There's just a lot of work that needs to be done before you can do that.
Well, how does it feel to have this kind of response? What I've read from your previous interviews, it seems like you've both been kind of surprised by the amount of people who've responded to the game.
Especially the way we get to go to
another forum and hear people talk about how hard it is and how it doesn't have graphics and how the user interface is crap and all that kind of stuff. Just hearing it over and over and over again and no one's sticking up for us. Of course, on our forum, it's different. but hearing about all that, it's like anytime World Fortress is brought up, it just gets trash for being too hard and being too clumsy. And so, yeah, just it is surprising that we do get as many fans.
Because, I mean, we of course, we're not... I don't think we have a blind spot about those shortcomings, right? So when we put it out, we're like, you know, we didn't think it would really catch on with anybody. Especially because, I mean, we had our other game with the crappy interface and everything, the original Armok, right?
Right.
Been up for 4 years and no one gave a crap. There were like 20 people in 4 years. Or, no, 6 years. Dwarf Fortress came out in 2006. We started it in 2002. And 2004 is the year, I think, of like really putting in a ton of time on it. So 6 years, Armok was up, and no one cared. We had maybe 200 or 300 people on the forums ever. Like, that was the number of forum accounts.
Oh.
And now there's like 8,000 legitimate accounts and 10,000 spam accounts, but there's like 8,000 legitimate accounts. And just all those people that came in, and it was from the first day too. It was crazy. We put the game up, and there were just, I mean, maybe 50 or 100 people played it or something, but then like half of them just went out and evangelized it. It was crazy. They were just going to the other forums. I remember this one guy just posted on Reddit, the kind of rude thing you don't want to happen. This guy goes and posts on another forum. He's like, hear ye, Dwarf Fortress has arrived. It's like his first post there or whatever, and. Yeah, so the same kind of thing we just ban a spammer for now is going on to, you know, get people to come play our game. And, it was just crazy. And we had this donation button up since April before the game was released. The game came out in August, and the donation button was up in April. I don't remember what it was. It was because we had been hosting the site for a while, and some random guy was like, "Hey, it's your birthday. Why don't you put up a donation button or something?" I was like, "All right." And so in that 4 months, we made $75, and then in August we made $1,000, and it was like, so at that point we knew we could make it, because it was like it's only been up for, you know, less than a month, and we're doing that well. Then I think that was weird because I quit my job the month before that.
So the $75 month you quit?
Yeah.
Because
I was tired. I mean, I was tired of the math, and I was like, I think our plan was to like live on my savings for 6 months, and if it doesn't work out, then I just go teach at a community college or something if I could get a job doing that. But it just didn't turn out that way. And now we're not working.
Brave. I'm glad it worked out. That's the kind of story that we all like to hear. I want to hear about the best bug that you've encountered, like the weirdest or the funniest.
Yeah, I'm horrible with favorites questions, but I mean, there have been bugs. I guess my two favorites were those. Well, they were just, they're old ones, and I've told the stories before. But just the one where the dude, this dwarf farmer, just walked into somebody's room. I guess it wasn't somebody's room; it was probably a stockpile because you can't pick up buildings. But he just picked up a bed, he just walked to the farm, planted it. Just like it was a seed, he just planted it, and he just walked away. Huh? Like, dude, what do you think's gonna happen? It must have been the ID numbers got screwed up or something. But he did that. And then there was the one with the hammerer. When you have the dwarven hammer, right? He's the executioner. And people don't see him as much anymore because it's so hard to get. I mean, the baron, there was a bug for a long time. You couldn't get a baron. I think right now you can get a baron. There might still be bugs as far as I know. But you get a hammerer, then you can. You have this executioner who uses a hammer. But he. There's a lot of assumptions in that code, but one of the things it doesn't check is his health, like the health of the hammer. So it's like, you're the hammer, you're doing this, even if he doesn't have any arms. So he can't hold a hammer. And so what he would do is he'd just go up, the guy would be, he'd bring the guy, stick him to the chain or wherever they hammer him. I think they'd put him on the chain. Hammer comes up, just starts biting the guy. It's like if there are 8 hammer strokes, it's 8 bites. And the hammer would bite him, and then shake until the limbs came off. But then, since it came from such a weird position, he didn't know that that shouldn't be. So he carried the limbs around his mouth for years. And he'd get multiple limbs. And he'd get this hammer with this big thing popping out of his mouth.
So it's become this dwarf game where he's acquiring limbs, you know, as time goes.
It's exactly. It's just like Mutant Minor. That's right.
That's
horrifying.
What a horrible way to die.
Yeah. It reminds me of that Nero story or whatever, right? It's like Nero would dress up in animal skins and bite people. And those are my two that I remember off the top of my head. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of other crap.
I like them both, and it's funny that you're describing them as bugs or being problematic, because I would see them as totally as features. When I was playing the game, I'm like, what profound insight on behalf of the developers to accommodate this bizarre situation. I would totally...
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the really nice thing about a video game is when you're playing a video game, and it happens to us all the time still, maybe not quite as much as it used to when we were growing up, but you don't know what was planned and what wasn't, right? I mean, when we were playing Falcon, we thought it was a flight simulator. We thought a lot more was going on down below in the world just because they kind of have these little people and tanks moving around and stuff. We thought a lot more was going on than was actually going on, right? AI-wise and tracking the overall situation. So there's a lot of times you can go on the board like with the farmer planting the bed. A lot of people, you know, will say, well, he must have had some kind of neurosis, or maybe it's because he likes beds if it happened to line up or whatever. And they'll come up with this, they'll fill in all the blanks themselves and give us way too much credit. And but in a sense, it's credit we deserve. I mean, that's what games do. Like you, it's kind of like a magic trick or whatever, where people fill in the blanks and make their own kind of reality with it. And so I see that an awful lot with Dwarf Fortress. I mean, I never jump in those forum threads and tell people they're wrong unless they explicitly like ask me, is this something that you guys plan? And then we're like, no, the game is a lot simpler than you think, but. But it's getting to the point where it's not simple, more simple than people think. Huge. But
you can't be faulted for like being deceitful about that because you fully disclose all the programmatic.
And I think it's something that game makers should strive for, actually, that kind of thing, because it's really just a one of the ending points of immersion when you're at that level where you're just willing to, it's kind of like suspension of disbelief, I guess. You're kind of willing to, you know, give the game more credit than it deserves, but you're playing it and you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's why Dwarf Fortress is so compelling, is because it, 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 it operates on both sides of that double standard. Like, it satisfies both of those questions, because I only heard about it because of fan content, and it seems like this trait, which is really weird and special about Dwarf Fortress, is that people have these game experiences that are so... It's the culmination of a lot of subtleties, and it forms something that's story-shaped, and they want to tell the story that they experienced. But they can't do that by having somebody else play the game, because it would be totally different. And so they feel like they've had a hand in creating the experience of Dwarf Fortress, and then they want to express it. So they've helped forge this creative commodity, and then they want to write a story about it, or draw a comic, or whatever it is, tell the story of their Dwarf Fortress experience. And I'm a victim of that too. I mean, my girlfriend's kind of like, she says she's not sick of hearing it, but she's probably sick of hearing it about these weird stories. But the reason I say that operates on both sides of the double standard is because it's not entirely created out of the absence of graphics. It is a comedy. I mean, the text is realistic and explicit, and the physics in the game are they fully accommodate all these things, and so it's a realistic simulation.
Yeah, I mean, you have to put in the legwork and get those details, every little detail. I mean, we just have a bunch of little elements. That's why this planning method we used is kind of explicitly set up to get people to generate stories by writing a story and then figuring out what are all the little nuts and bolts that make it work.
Right.
Every single thing, and you just add them all in, and then that story could occur. But it's not just that story that can occur. It's every permutation of those elements, and then you have, there are games with after action reports. I guess if you have someone writing their story of how they won that hack or something, there's something. I guess there's something stylistic, like something similar about a lot of those stories, although, I mean, NetHack is a very complicated game, so I guess, I mean, those stories, I mean, I don't, they kind of rise to the same level, maybe. I mean, there's just not as many diverse elements. I mean, it's all about dungeon crawling, I guess, is maybe the difference. And there's kind of this puzzle aspect to the game, or strategic problem-solving aspect of the game that's always in your face. So the stories are kind of written from that perspective of how I beat this part, or how overcame this obstacle.
Yeah, it's the objective is shared. But in Dwarf Fortress, like you said, there's no objective. There's no win condition.
Yeah. So that I think that's something where maybe I can't easily think of parallels. I mean, if there's something like a flight simulator, like Microsoft Flight Simulator, I don't remember reading any after action reports of Microsoft Flight Simulator, even though I'm sure it's very complicated, but people aren't like, maybe they are. Maybe I just don't hang out with the right people, because they'll be like, the wind was on my flaps just right, and I was flying into Dulles or whatever, right? It's like, I'm sure my dad probably talks like that, right? Just talking about like how it was. Yeah, come to think of it, I think I've heard a few stories where you talk about
it.
Flight
doesn't lend itself to being a story the same way as coming up with Beowulf out of the blue or something.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not trying to sell ourselves short. I'm just trying to think of something.
Well, I guess it's like that old cliche about monkeys typing into infinity, right? Because if there is some math involved there, but if you have people, like this many people playing the game, this many hours, like all of these stories within the fantastic world, but now you've got the raw materials laying around and a simulation constantly stirring those components up.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool that it's gotten to the point where there are people that don't play Dwarf Mode, they don't play Adventure Mode, they just generate worlds and read Legends Mode and try and find the most interesting people.
Yeah.
And now there are fan-made utilities to help them do that. Oh, these world viewers where they can search for the most interesting people by seeing who has the most historical events, and then they can read through that, and they try and link them up with their relatives, and they come up with these narratives, and they just go on the forums and post this giant story or whatever. And I think that's really cool.
So with that in mind, like, how does the current manifestation of the simulation compare to your original starry-eyed hopes and dreams for?
Because I guess the because it, we originally have this Armok game, right? And from the beginning, Drag Slay, like, 99, I mean, it was, the original Drag Slay actually had a way more fun adventure mode than this game currently has. That was the one that I, what, we spent 6 years on that or something, on and off, from, like, 93 to 98 or something, working on Drag Slay.
We wanted to go beyond that, though. We wanted to for you to become a king instead of just kill a bunch of monsters. You know, we wanted to have intrigue and stuff like that.
And I think what happened is dwarf mode, basically. That we had this mutant miner game morph in and kind of take over Armok. And the reason it took over is because it was an ASCII and Armok was in 3D. Horrifying 3D if you've seen it, but 3D. Yeah. And so dwarf mode took over, and then we were focused more on dwarf mode, which was not part of our original intention.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how it's turned out completely different, is we were thinking we would be doing first person stories almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And then the game would be a lot further along there, but now we've got this whole kind of fortress life thing that is more like a Sims style game or something, or like a I don't know what's comparable to it with that many people. There are a bunch of little games with little people that have names moving around though. And so what has been focused on a lot more, like these industries and things that they do, like we just did, you can now mill rock nuts, make rock nut paste, put it in a screw press and get rock nut oil, which you can turn into soap. That was not part of our original, that'd be the kind of thing where we're like, yeah, Ultima 7 was cool, how you could like take flour and bake bread and stuff, and we'll eventually put that in the game, but you know, we'll be killing dragons and leading armies before then. And no, it's way more domestic than we thought it would be, and that's just because dwarf mode lends itself more to that kind of community kind of activity.
Yeah.
So it's turned out a lot differently. But
so why the focal shifts that happened in there? You were working on the first person, that was kind of your main objective, and then the side thing, there was a focal shift where the side thing became the main thing. Why did that happen?
So the game we had originally envisioned, where you have dwarves, they make some crafts, they dig out a thing, and then the adventurer comes in and cleans it up, was going to be kind of half and half, 50% one game, 50% the other, and was going to be done quickly and finished. And so when we decided, it kept siphoning off stuff from the original Armok until we're like, okay, let's make this a fantasy game because it's going so much faster. But the thing is, you do the dwarf mode first, and then you do the adventure mode, right? In that vision where it's a small game, when it's becoming a larger game, dwarf mode's still the focus. You want to finish it first, and we don't finish anything. So we're still trying to finish dwarf mode, and adventure mode getting the short end of the stick the whole time, until 2 months ago or something. Whenever we put out this adventure mode release, where adventure mode is not on par with dwarf mode yet, but it looks like a game now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a game kind of structure to it, and you understand, like, I can kill some night creatures, and then I can go kill a big ogre, and then I can go kill a dragon, and then the game's over, I'm just wandering around, there's no monsters left to kill. But it has at least a recognizable format, whereas before it wasn't even playable. If you look at the development page, it's pretty adventure mode heavy.
Yeah.
So we're finally, I think, gonna get adventure mode, so where it's standing with dwarf mode, and they're gonna become with the army stuff, they're both gonna change an awful lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, dwarf mode's probably gonna seem more like like civilization or something, because the world will suddenly matter.
Right.
And in adventure mode, I mean, it's gonna be crazy. But
yeah. Well, my last question is just what's next, but I guess I mean that beyond.
I can read
Dwarf Fortress.
That's not your next question. What's your last question?
Well, that is the last. Well, it's what's fucking next. That's, I guess, right. Is the question. But the fucking is there for scope, because this game is so huge in scope, and the scope is widening as time goes on, instead of
As the circle and the perimeter increases with the area, right? So it keeps.
Yeah. So I can't imagine. I've heard you talk a whole lot. We've never talked, but about how it's possible that this game could be your career. Just this one game could be. It really could. Is that what you want? And if it's not what you want, what other projects interest you, or even just conceptually?
Well, we've been interested in I mean, I guess the other main kind of thing, it kind of comes out of games like Starflight. We kind of fiddled in the past with the space game. And, you know, it's like, of course, you know, our vision of that is the same as with Dwarf Fortress. It's got everything in it. And what else have we messed around with in the past? I mean, mostly smaller projects other than that, I guess. We've done like city-style games. When we were little kids, we did like Grand Theft Auto style things. It was called like Liberal Crime Squads, basically the outgrowth of that. That's what they looked like. Okay. A little less kind of political humor and stuff, more just running around the city killing stuff. So those kind of things, basically just changing the the time period of our simulation, more or less, right? Because those are the kind of games that interest us mostly. I mean, there have been other small projects. Like one time, I was interested in making a kind of comic book generator. It was a kind of generator again, where you kind of pick what you'd want to do in the next panel, and then it would kind of expand out from there. It was just a little idea we were messing with.
More small stuff like Liberal Crime Squad-esque type projects we were working on.
Yeah, we had a little one where a guy would just go to, it was kind of a test bed for the AI in Dwarf Fortress, where the guy would just go to his job and then go to a convenience store and be spending the money, but it was written with a more robust framework, and so that was just kind of just wandering around. I think he blew his money on prostitutes or something. I forgot how it worked. There were just three things he could do, but he would think about them. Then there's
We had some arcade.
Yeah, lots of arcade games. It was like World War One Medic, which I don't know if you play that one. Mm-hmm. That one. There's lots. I mean, we had hundreds of those things that we wrote when we were little kids. Little planes flying, like these World War II planes, and you kind of strafe the ground and fly around. But the main thing with that one is you just leave your plane parked on the aircraft carrier, and then go scroll the view so that you can watch the landing craft come and put people up on the beaches, and then they just be running around and shooting each other on the beaches. It was just kind of fun to watch.
So it's all the actually doing the work that you assumed the flight simulator programmers were doing, but weren't actually.
It actually would do all that little stuff, and I mean, it was a 2D side scroller. But it was intriguing. We made little board games, just like checkers type stuff before. That was a long time ago. Not really as interested in that kind of thing. I've had little ideas after, you know, just small board games type stuff.
Is it intimidating, I guess, to like factor how well appreciated Dwarf Fortress is in, does that like make you apprehensive in considering new projects?
No, the only thing that makes us apprehensive in considering new projects is that a small project, even if it's better received, it's not going to be a donation generator. Mm-hmm. It's like if we wanted to spend time on new projects, we'd probably have to sell them or something to be successful. I mean, I have a feeling we'd be more financially successful if we were smelling it. It'd be like that. Selling small casual games or something like that. Because we feel pretty comfortable with that kind of project. It's not. I mean, I think we understand games pretty well, and the small ones as well. And we would do well doing that kind of thing. But we don't. We just don't have time to do it if we want to take Dwarf Fortress where it wants to go. We had been setting time for the month end project or whatever, which ended up being. I mean, it's a bunch of different stuff we work on. But it's more just to kind of let off steam. Although we hope that we get something done sometime. But even if we get something done, we're not really sure how to release it. Like, can you release it into this, into the middle of this this thing that's going on? Is it just going to alienate our Dwarf Fortress fans? Right. They're like, what have you been doing with your time? Like, you owe every day of your life to me. that's how it feels. I mean, it feels like I have to work every day, and that's what I do.
Well, yeah, it, I mean, that's the flip side, I suppose, of the donation model, is that people feel like it's more of an investment than however much they end up giving you. Like, they'll spend, you know, $8 on a latte. It's no big deal, but they give you $8, and they want a 40-hour work week.
No, I mean, it happens that people pay for past work, but most people are paying for the future. And it's you know, those people are invested in what we're doing. And, it, I mean, Dwarf Fortress is our favorite game. I mean, it is, I mean, not to play yet, because it's not up. I mean, it's fun, but, you know, we'd like to make it better. And I have trouble playing it just because I would add stuff all the time or see bugs.
Yeah, I'll bet. That's probably all you see right now when you guys play is just stuff that needs to be made that isn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to change, because we always came into this like, we want to write a game where we can play it too, right? And because the games...
Yeah, that is the reason we come up with the random generated worlds.
So the developer can play. Yeah, I mean, that's why there's no temptation to do a plot, because we always have come from the perspective, just because of doing it growing up, that we just write games for ourselves. That's what we did. We never distributed them or anything until very, very long time later. So, but it hasn't actually turned out that way, because now we hardly, you know, get it, can sit down and play it because we want to add stuff to it. It's turned out very weird. But, yeah, so that seems like.